Meeting is going to come to order.
Hi, good morning, everyone. It's great to see so many people to turn out. My job is just to kick this off and get us started and introduce the committee that's here. And so I'll do that. And it's a real pleasure. Most, if not all, of these folks I see multiple times a day, and in fact, some, half, are at least on committees. So I have a lot of respect for these individuals. I'm glad they're down here today, and we'll be going through what this is all about. I'll start over here on the left, and this is Representative Joe Hoppe. Representative, and he's got nameplates, so I'm just pointing him out, of course. Yeah, you can read. Jennifer Falloon, Pat Garofalo, Representative Garofalo. Committee Chair, Legislative Assistant is Kate Hensing, and Representative Sarah Anderson. And a committee administrator, Tom Freeman, Representative Mary Murphy, Karen Clark, and Jean Poppy. And we're still missing one. So they have a lot of information to share. So I'm not going to stand in the way just to understand that this is really important to us. This is our opportunity to listen and find out about the process. It's all about transparency and fair and open, and I'll let them get started. Thank you.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I didn't catch who you were.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. I end up in the paper about twice or three times a week lately. But I'm Mike Benson. I'm a state representative for District 30B, and I'm a Rochester resident. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Benson. I appreciate you coming this morning. We also have a couple of other local lawmakers that are in the audience today that I would like to recognize. We have Representative Kim Norton and Representative Tina Liebling. Where are you, Tina? Yes, glad you could come. And then we also have some former lawmakers, which are kind of fun for me to see. We have former Representative Randy Demmer and former Representative Fran Bradley, and also former Senator Sheila Cascaden, and I think she's still here. Or did she have to leave? So thank you for all coming today. I really appreciate you coming out because this process is very important, as Representative Benson pointed out. What we do in this with this redistricting and drawing the lines will last us for 10 years. So going through this process is very important, and I appreciate you guys coming out. Hopefully you will get a better idea of what's involved with the redistricting process today. We will hear first from our estate demographer, Tom Gillespie, and he'll give a review of the population and demographic shifts within the state of Minnesota, as well as this area. And we will also hear from our nonpartisan research staff, Matt Gehring, who will give you a better flavor of what the local units of government can expect from the redistricting process, because they can't start their work until the legislature gets done with their process of drawing the lines. So he'll give you a timeline and hopefully be able to answer any questions that you might have on how it impacts precinct boundaries and ward boundaries and things of that nature. Also just wanted you to know that this is our third trip outside of the Capitol that we have taken. Our first trip was to Marshall, Minnesota 2 weeks ago. Then last Friday we were in Hermantown. And now this Friday we're in Rochester, so we're trying to hit all the corners of the state as much as we can. And I want to say a thank you to all of the members for coming, because this day is traditionally held for folks to go out into their own legislative districts and reach their constituents. So I appreciate you coming and spending the time here with us in describing this process. Hopefully some of you guys heard about this meeting today from the different media outlets that we have contacted to notify folks about this so that you can participate in the process. We've also contacted local government officials, too, to make sure that people are aware of this meeting. And please know that if you don't get to your question answered today, or if you get home and you say, well, what about this? I want you to know that you can feel free to contact me. My email address, if your pen and paper is ready, is rep.sarah@house.mn. And you can also find me on the web as well if you didn't get that written down. Feel free to email me any questions that you might have, and we'll do our best to make sure that we find an answer for you on that. And then also just wanted you to know, because this is redistricting for every 10 years, redistricting is guided largely by the U.S. Constitution, Supreme Court cases, the Minnesota State Constitution, as well as Minnesota state statutes. So that's where we get our guidance and how this process works. We are responsible for drawing all 201 legislative seats. That includes both the House and Senate seats. And we are also responsible for redrawing the lines for Congress, so the 8 congressional seats that we have here in Minnesota. And we feel very blessed to have 8 seats to draw. It came into question on whether or not Minnesota would have all 8 congressional seats. It was a hot competition between us and North Carolina, right? We beat them out by about 15,000 people. And I must say, I give that credit to the citizens of Minnesota in being diligent in filling out those U.S. Census forms. They do really matter. So when those census takers, hopefully they don't have to knock on your door, but if they do, make sure that you fill out those forms, because they are really important, and it makes a difference on what kind of representation we have in Washington. For us as the redistricting committee, our goal is to have a fair and open redistricting process for all Minnesotans. We take into consideration both the demographic and population shifts that we have in this state, and you'll get like I said earlier, you'll get a flavor from that from Tom Gillespie, our state demographer. So with that, I think what we will do is we will move ahead, and Mr. Gillespie, if you can start us off, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Gillespie. I'm the Minnesota State Demographer in the Minnesota Department of Administration. Madam Chair, members of the committee, and ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to give just a brief overview of the population change that we have seen in Minnesota in the past decade and the implications of that for the redistricting process. We're still waiting for the final numbers from the Census Bureau, and that should be coming within the next few weeks, and so we're still waiting on the exact date in which that will come. But we know quite a bit about Minnesota and how we have changed as a population. Minnesota added nearly 350,000 people last decade, about 7.8% of our total population. Minnesota and South Dakota led the Frost Belt, the Midwest and Northeast portions of the nation in total population growth. I hate to say it, but South Dakota edges out just slightly by a tenth of a percent, but it was very close. Minnesota ranked 26th in total in percent population change and 21st in numeric population change. The largest change was in Texas, with adding 4.3 million people, and in Nevada with the largest percentage increase, adding more than 35% to their total population. Another aspect of the population change is that Minnesota is changing in a number of ways, one of which is that our minority populations are growing and accounted for about 65% of the total population growth of the state last decade. Minnesota grew by 7.8%, but that was a bit slower than the national growth rate of 9.7%. And the pattern that has been set up for several decades now is that the Southwest and West and the Southeast portions of the country, variously known as the Sun Belt, have experienced most of the population growth, and the Northeast and Midwest and the Plain States areas have experienced substantially less population growth over the past few decades. Minnesota is similar in size to some other states. Colorado is the closest to us, just slightly less than us in population, but growing very rapidly. Alabama is a bit smaller than Colorado, and right now is growing at a bit slower pace than Minnesota. South Carolina is also close on our heels, and we're catching up to Wisconsin slowly, but we are still catching up to Wisconsin and just behind them in total population growth. The smallest state in the country is Wyoming, with a little bit more than 500,000 people. This also illustrates that each state has to receive at least one congressional seat, and then the remaining congressional seats are apportioned based upon a formula that at its core is of population size. California is the largest state in the country and now has 53 congressional seats. Minnesota has 8, which we have kept since 1960. We are one of the few states in the Northeast and Midwest that has maintained our congressional representation. If we look at population change around the country and by county, what we find is an area of the country in the heartland, through the plains area of the state, through the very core of the country, in which most counties are declining in population and have been doing so for a long period of time. In Minnesota, that is primarily in southern and southwestern and western Minnesota, where we have seen long-term population loss in many of the counties, but that is consistent with the pattern that we see through the Dakotas, Nebraska, Kansas, eastern Montana, and eastern Colorado, into Oklahoma, and into North Texas. In Minnesota, as I mentioned, the southwest and western portions of the state, many of the counties lost population last decade. The most substantial growth in the state was in a ring around the Twin City metropolitan area, with very rapid growth extending essentially from St. Cloud through the Twin Cities down to the Rochester area, in which some of the counties in that area were among the fastest growing counties in the nation that were part of the Twin City metropolitan area. The largest growth is in that donut ring around the Twin Cities, with counties such as Sherburne and Wright and Isanti and Chisago experiencing the most rapid change, and then the interior suburban counties of Anoka, Dakota, Carver, Scott, and Washington also experienced rather substantial change this past decade. Olmsted County, of course, also continues to grow and experience strong growth. If we look at the minority populations of the state, which is important for the redistricting process, the largest changes were in Hennepin and Ramsey County, and in addition, Dakota, Anoka, and Washington counties. We also saw, in terms of the largest percentages, some of the counties outside of the Twin City area also show up. Most notably for this region of the state in southern Minnesota is Nobles County shows up as having one of the highest percentage minority. Nobles is in southwestern Minnesota. The implications of population change for redistricting this time, as the pattern has been established in the post-World War II period, is that some of the Sun Belt states gained congressional seats, while many of the states in Northeast and Midwest portions of the country lost congressional seats. 10 years ago, Wisconsin lost a congressional seat and went from 9 to 8. Iowa lost a congressional seat this time in this apportionment, as did Missouri and Illinois. Michigan also lost a seat. North and South Dakota each have one seat, so that is the minimum, and they cannot lose a seat. Texas gained the largest number of seats, with 4 seats gained, and most of the gains were in the southwest and southeast portions of the United States. In the apportionment process, Minnesota was literally the last seat apportioned. Our 8th congressional seat was the last seat apportioned in the country, just barely beating out North Carolina and just slightly behind California. some have raised concern that this means that Minnesota will likely lose a seat in the next apportionment 10 years from now. That is, in terms of straight forecasting, that is likely to happen, but I would caution against making that assumption too early. We have made that assumption in the past. In the 1980s, it appeared that Louisiana would pass us up in population, and we would lose a seat to Louisiana in the 1990 redistricting. That did not occur when Minnesota's growth accelerated and Louisiana's growth really slowed down. Louisiana has incidentally just lost another seat with this last redistricting. Our population growth was about 7.8% over the last decade. What that means is that our average legislative house district gained nearly 2,900 people. Our average Senate district will increase by about 5,700 people, and our average U.S. congressional district will increase by approximately 48,000 people. The districts continue to get larger over time, and our legislators and congressmen are representing ever larger districts over time. If we look at our congressional districts, and this is based upon a population estimate that I made using data for 2009 as a basis of it is the city and township estimates for the state. This estimate is an attempt to get some idea of what is happening in terms of our legislative and congressional districts. The two largest districts are the suburban districts, the north suburban and the south suburban districts around the Twin Cities. The smallest districts are in the core cities in Minneapolis-St. Paul area and in western Minnesota, the 7th congressional seat. The first congressional seat in southern Minnesota is also a bit below the equal population size. The specific estimates are that the 6th congressional seat as of 2009 was about 94,000 people larger than the equal population size. The 2nd district, approximately 74,000 people larger than the equal population size. The first congressional seat in southern Minnesota is about 27,000 less than the equal population size. And if the legislature maintains the same general configuration of districts, which they're not bound to, but if they do maintain that same configuration, the first congressional seat as well as the 4th, 5th, and 7th, and 8th will need to get a bit larger, with particularly the 7th district in western Minnesota and the two central city districts will need to get substantially larger than they are today. By legislative district, looking at state house districts, what we find is that the greatest changes or greatest differences are in southwestern Minnesota and northeastern Minnesota, where a number of the districts are among the smallest districts in the state, and also in the core cities of the Twin City metropolitan area, where districts are on average smaller than the equal population size. The districts in suburban and exurban areas around the Twin Cities are generally larger than the equal population size. In southwestern Minnesota, we find many of the districts are just a bit below the equal population size, but the districts around Rochester are a bit larger than the equal population size, and District 29A in Dodge County and northwestern Olmsted County is very close to the equal population size of a district. Again, this looks at the two districts in Rochester as they appeared with the legislative district lines drawn 10 years ago. The smallest and largest House districts in the state of Minnesota, generally the smallest districts are in the southwest and northeast portions of the state. The largest districts are largely in the suburban area around the Twin Cities, with some of the areas in the southern and southwestern part of the Twin Cities are among the largest districts in the state. The differences are between the largest and smallest legislative districts are a bit larger than they were in the 2000 redistricting, so that the redistricting will be a little bit larger of a task, but they are, the differences are a bit smaller than they were in 1990 when the differences were even larger than they are today. And just as a final note, and Mr. Gerlach will address this more in more detail, but with the date of the primary moved up by a month, the legislature will have essentially a month less than they did in the previous three redistrictings to draw the lines. The deadline for the legislative and congressional districts is February 21st of 2012, or 25 weeks before the primary in 2012. And with that, Madam Chair, I stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gillespie. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure. I just had a question that I'm not sure if it was clear, how close we need to come to the equal population for the congressional districts as well as the House and Senate.
Mr. Gillespie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Poppy, Mr. Gerlach will probably address this in more detail, but the standard for congressional seats has been, to the extent possible, exact equality in population. 10 years ago, there was a difference of one person between the congressional seats. That is substantially equal in population. For legislative districts, the standard has been a little bit more flexible, but still fairly strict. For Minnesota, it's plus or minus 2.5%, and so that's still a fairly tight range for legislative districts. As we go to local units of government, the standard is a little bit more lax than that, but the concept is of substantial equality in population. It's the whole reason for redistricting is the one person, one vote kind of concept.
Representative Poppy?
Yeah, thank you.
I think there was a court case that had about 14. There were 14 people off, and they threw it out. It wasn't, you know. So it's pretty strict when it comes to that. And I thank you for that, Mr. Gillespie. Any members, any other questions at all? Or? Okay. And I do have a couple of things that I neglected to mention before. First of all, I want to welcome Representative Dwayne Quam. Thank you for coming out today, too. And folks, if you didn't notice, up here at the table are cards. I encourage you to take those for your use. And there is also a sign-in sheet. I encourage you to sign in. We like to be able to communicate with folks as far as the redistricting process. So if you haven't had a chance to sign in, if you can do that, that would be helpful too. And then also, I forgot to tell you that after we have these couple of presentations here, I do invite you to come up and ask any questions that you may have regarding the redistricting process and or any comments that you might have too. So with that, Mr. Gehring, will you take it away?
Most here. Madam Chair, what I'm going to do today is sort of talk through the mechanics of redistricting, and there are two sets of handouts in your packet that you should have, and I think have been distributed to members of the public as well. One is a set of maps that is titled Census Layers for Redistricting, and there's a stapled packet that has a number of timelines specific to local units of government and their redistricting process. I'll walk through those timelines in just a minute. But first, to sort of give you an idea of how the redistricting process works, I think it's important to understand what exactly you're redistricting and how districts are built within the state of Minnesota and within the country. If you think of any piece of territory within the state, people live in voting districts and live within political boundaries. The redistricting process is the process of shifting all voting districts to reflect shifting populations within the state or within the county or territory that you're redistricting. There could be, depending on how far out you go, everybody that lives within the state lives maybe within 9 or 10 different types of political boundaries and political districts, and those districts are the are what you'll be shifting over the next year and a half or so. So to see some of how those layers all work and how they have to fit together, I put together these this set of maps that has Wabasha County on it. The idea is just to kind of show you how the layers have to fit together to make a workable set of voting districts. So box one, I just have the basic outline of Wabasha County that everybody's probably fairly familiar with. Within Wabasha County, though, every piece of territory is divided up into a specific city or township. And in some counties in the state, there's also unorganized territory. So particularly rural counties may have territory that's going to be subject to redistricting by county commissioners because it's not organized into a city or township government. But within Wabasha County, all the territory is divided into a particular city or township. And you can see on box two there, all the cities, you see city Wabasha and Plainview and Lake City and then all the townships that make up Wabasha County. Within those cities and townships, those units of government have to create precincts. And precincts are the geographic areas where voters live that make up sort of the population that will vote in a particular polling place. Sometimes it gets a little confused in statute and then sort of in common usage as well. There's a difference between a precinct and a polling place. The precinct is the geographic neighborhood or area where all the voters live. And the polling place is the specific church basement or school gym or other building where people actually go and cast their votes. And so the precinct is where all the voters live that will go vote in any particular polling place. And what happens during the redistricting process is that cities will have to modify their precinct boundaries and ward boundaries to reflect the way the population has shifted within that city or township, and also to reflect the changes that you'll make at the legislative level to legislative boundaries as well as congressional boundaries. Every precinct within the state has to fit neatly and perfectly within a legislative district and a congressional district, and also within smaller political subdivision districts. You can't have splits, and so that's why at the local level, cities and townships will have to adjust potentially their precinct boundaries, and that's why it happens after you complete your work next February, because they need to wait and see what you enact before they can adjust their precinct boundaries accordingly. So you can see in box three there, most small townships just have one precinct, and so their process is going to be fairly simple. They'll just have to reestablish that this is the same precinct boundaries that they'll use for the next 10 years unless there is a split that's caused by a legislative or congressional district going through that territory. Some of the more populous cities will also divide themselves into multiple precincts or multiple wards, depending on the way the city council is structured in that city. So, for example, in Wabasha, there are three different wards for city council members, and those wards happen to be the same as precincts within that city. So you can see them labeled on the map there. So how do precincts and wards get built? They're built using census blocks, and census blocks are created by the U.S. Census Bureau, and those are the smallest little building blocks that they use to go around and count the population of any particular territory. So in box four there, you can see I've zoomed into the city of Wabasha, and you can see the wards and precincts and the city boundaries. I've also added the layer of census blocks, so you can see kind of how all the little census blocks make up the wards and precincts within the city. And if you flip it over, I've added, in addition to the census blocks, the population numbers, so you can kind of see how census blocks are built. Generally speaking, they follow streets and sort of visible features within an area. So particularly if you're in sort of a densely populated area, the census blocks are likely to follow sort of basic city blocks. But as you get to more rural areas, the census blocks will follow ditches or streams or other sort of visible geographic features. And that's what the Census Bureau uses when they're going around and counting people. They'll use these visible features to make sure that they're covering all the territory. So when you're going through your redistricting process at the state level, and when local units of government are going through their redistricting process, they need to make sure that all of these districts are built out of census blocks, and all the districts that they, the voting districts that they build, need to fit within one another. So as you get to bigger and bigger districts, up to congressional districts, every single precinct and every single ward fits neatly within the next biggest district. The next set of handouts is a set of timelines that I put together to try to give members an idea of sort of how the process will work at the local level and when things need to happen and why they need to happen at those particular times. I have separate handouts for cities and townships, school districts, and counties. There's also an additional handout in here for cities that have a 2011 municipal election. Those cities that will have an election this fall will have to do some work this spring in May to reflect, to adjust their ward boundaries to reflect the new census data that will be coming out, as Mr. Glaspie mentioned, in a couple of weeks. They'll need to adjust those boundaries to use new boundaries for this coming fall's elections. The timelines and the dates that I've included in these handouts are sort of meant as a guide to what's in statute and what the requirements are for local units of government. They're not meant to be a complete, detailed a guide to everything that needs to happen in the redistricting process, but sort of an overview. The Secretary of State's office is required in statute to do some trainings, and they're also in the process of creating a much bigger, much more detailed guide to the redistricting process for local units of government. And I think that their guide is in sort of a draft form right now, but should be published fairly soon, and it has a number of sort of best practice recommendations and other processes that locals can use to make sure that all these deadlines are met within a reasonable time. The other thing that I should mention about the dates that are on these handouts is that just for the sake of simplicity, I assumed in sort of figuring these dates that every part of the redistricting process will happen on the last possible date for that to occur. This is only designed that way just to make the dates easy, but both for members of the committee and members of the public should remember that if the legislature, if you get an agreement on a plan and get it enacted into law before the deadline for doing so, all these dates will shift up. And so currently, you know, the big date that we talk about is February 21st of 2012, and all of the successive dates are based on that date. But if you get something done ahead of time, all the cities and townships will have to get their work done ahead of time as well. So just keep that in mind as we go through these dates here. So for cities that don't have an election this fall, the big date, as I mentioned, will be February 21st of 2012. This is when they'll be able to begin the process of drawing new precinct boundaries. As I mentioned, the reason why they wait until the state boundaries are complete is because precinct boundaries have to be built within congressional and legislative districts. And so they'll need to wait and see what district boundaries you create before they can correctly build their own precincts and to make sure that they conform to the state level boundaries. So they'll have a process of 60 days once the legislative plans are enacted to complete local redistricting. So that will get them to roughly April 3rd of 2012 as a deadline for doing new precinct boundaries. There's also a process in statute for members of the public to challenge the work of a city or township in creating precinct boundaries. The deadline based on a February 21st date would be April 10th of 2012 for submitting that challenge in court. Otherwise, the deadline would be within 3 weeks of adoption of a local redistricting plan. There's also some requirements statute for notification to the Secretary of State of precinct boundary changes that will need to happen by May of 2012. In addition to creating new precincts, one of the things that local governments will have to keep in mind is that as they draw new precincts, they may be drawing out existing polling places. And so there's a process in statute for creating or finding new school gyms or finding new church basements where you can have voters go. That process needs to be complete by May 16th of 2012 to be sure that those new places are in effect for the 2012 election cycle. And there's the process for notifying the Secretary of State, and there's some standards for what a polling place needs to be in statute, and I can answer questions about that if people have more specific questions about it later. And then finally, on these sheets are the sort of dates for the general election cycle in 2012, including leading up to the state general election on November 6th of 2012, and the state primary election will be August 14th, and that will be the first election at which the new precinct and ward boundaries have to take effect. There are also, in addition to timelines and statutes, some sort of standards for creating precincts. As I mentioned, in building precincts, cities have to use census block lines to build out their precincts. Once the initial round of redistricting is complete and you've built precincts based on census blocks, over the course of the decade, it's very likely that cities and townships will annex territory or boundaries will shift slightly. When that happens, the cities and townships do have to adjust their precinct boundary lines to reflect those changes. And when they do so, they need to use visible, clearly recognizable physical features in creating those boundaries. So that'd be, as I mentioned earlier, streets and roads and streams or ditches or other types of clearly identifiable areas that you can see from the ground that help delineate which when you're entering one precinct or another. Precincts are not subject to equal population requirements. This is because in most cases, cities or voters are not electing a person to represent a precinct. They're electing people as a block within that precinct, and precincts are sort of built out into to bigger voting districts, so city council ward districts or legislative or congressional districts. So it doesn't necessarily matter that each precinct have equal population, but when you get to the political boundaries, so the legislative districts or the city council districts where you're electing one person from a particular boundary area, that's when you get into to population equality requirements. In addition to the standards for creating precincts, there are a couple of other unique provisions of statute that may be of interest to local redistrictors, including if a city has wards and they fail to complete their redistricting process by the deadlines required in statute, there's a statutory mandate that they do not get paid until the redistricting process is complete, and that applies to both the city mayor as well as the members of the city council. So if they don't meet the April 3rd deadline, no paycheck until they get their work done. I'll talk about it again later. And Madam Chair, there's also an additional requirement for cities of the first class, which will be the city of Rochester once the new census numbers are certified, related to electing council members, depending on how the city council is structured and how elections are held may affect the city of Rochester. I'll have the local officials take a look at that and see if that applies to them. But, you know, it's the one thing that Mr. Glass, we didn't mention, but is probably of importance to everybody in the room, is that the city of Rochester is moving up to join Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth as cities of the first class within Minnesota following completion of the census data this cycle. In addition to cities and townships, there are some requirements for counties and school districts as well. At the county level, counties will have to redistrict their county commissioner boundaries, and if there is any unorganized territory within a county, the county board is responsible for redistricting those unorganized territories because there isn't a city council in place to do that. The county commissioner districts have to wait until after the city boundaries are created before they can create commissioner districts. So that means that they have 80 days rather than 60 days following completion of legislative redistricting, which will give them a deadline of May 1st of 2012 to complete their work. As I mentioned earlier, the reason that you wait at the county level is because counties will need to build their county commissioner districts based on the precincts that the cities will draw. And of course, the precincts that the cities will draw have to wait until there are some legislative and congressional boundaries in place to build those precincts. There's a number of other sort of unique notice requirements that apply to counties that don't apply to cities, including publishing notice in newspapers of new legislative and congressional boundaries, as well as some additional requirements related to sort of facilitating information flows between the state and local units of government that will apply to the county auditor within each county. As I mentioned earlier, the Secretary of State's office is required in statute to coordinate some training programs and to put out some documents that help the county auditors sort of facilitate that process and make sure that they're complying with the law correctly. I didn't include all those additional standards in this handout, but again, I can answer some questions if there are some of those after the hearing is over. There are some standards for creating county commissioner districts, which are slightly different than standards in statute for creating city precinct boundaries. District boundaries, as I mentioned, have to be created using precinct lines, so that's why you're waiting until after the city has completed its work to do county commissioner districts. Commissioner districts have to be composed of contiguous territory, and they have to be as regular and compact in form as practicable. Contiguous territory means that all the territory within a particular district has to be touching. You can't have islands of territory that make up a single district. They all have to be in sort of one block of territory. And compactness means that the district needs to be as close as possible to sort of a circle or a square shape, as opposed to sort of, sometimes you see districts from other states that are sort of look like an octopus or like a spider or something that have these kind of tentacles that go out. That type of district is not a compact district. A compact district is one that looks like, as I mentioned, like a circle or a square shape. County commissioner districts do have to comply with some equal population requirements. There is a standard in statute that population of any district within a county commissioner, set of county commissioner districts, can't vary by more than 10% from the average population size of all districts. There is some leeway for county commissioner districts to be of different sizes, but generally speaking, when you're going through this process, it would be a good idea to make sure that all the commissioner districts are as close as possible to equal population, even though you're not required in statute to make them be exact. It's helpful to have them be exact to sort of discourage challenges to your plan based on equal population requirements. And there's also a requirement that a majority of the least populous districts may not contain less than a majority of the population of the county. Madam Chair, I've said this sentence three times now as we've gone through the process, and I finally figured out why it's always been so confusing to me, and I realize it's because there's a typo in that bullet point. So I finally figured it out at the third stop. Finally, some other statutory provisions that relate to county commissioner districts included an allowance for counties to levy a special redistricting tax to cover expenses related to redistricting. There are some restrictions on that in statute, so I'd encourage you to take a look at the statute itself if you're a county and are considering levying that type of a tax. And finally, there's an allowance in statute for a court to appoint a redistricting commission if the county board isn't completing its work on time and a voter has challenged the action of the county board, either because they don't like the boundaries that have been created or the county board hasn't created any new boundaries. The court could choose to appoint a redistricting commission to do the work on behalf of the county if that is determined to be necessary by the court. And finally, the last handout relates to school districts. School districts have a little bit less work to do than cities and townships and counties because typically school districts are going to follow they're going to use the same ward and precinct boundaries that cities will establish. But there are some additional requirements for them in statute. Their deadline is going to be May 1st of 2012 to complete new school board district boundaries. There are some requirements for public hearings to be held before those boundaries are enacted. And there's some deadlines that I've included in this handout related to when the notice of the hearing has to be published. There's also an allowance in statute, the same as for cities and townships and counties, for voters to apply in district court if they want to challenge the action of the school board or if the school board hasn't acted at all. A voter can challenge to compel the school board to act. So that deadline is going to be within 3 weeks of adoption of a school board plan or May 8th of 2012. The school district primary election will coincide with the state primary elections in most cases, which would be August 14th of 2012, and the state general election, of course, November 6th of 2012. There are some additional statutory standards for school member districts, including requirement that they be as equal in population as practicable. There are some sort of nuances there depending on how the school district is structured and whether they have multi-member districts or single-member districts. School board member districts have to be compact and contiguous territory, the same as applies at the state level and to counties. There's also an allowance for school districts to use their own special census if they would like to do so, or they can use the U.S. Census data in creating their new district boundaries, although at this point in the process, it's probably, if a school district hasn't already undertaken its own special census, the U.S. Census data is probably the route to go. And finally, applies to counties, to city councils as well. There's a requirement in statute that if the school board members don't conform their existing boundaries or complete the redistricting process by the deadlines in the statute, the school board members don't get paid until the redistricting is complete. And Madam Chair, that's all I have. If there are questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Gearing. Members, any questions at all? Okay, thank you. I also wanted to recognize we had a couple more people walk into the room here today. We have Senator Dave Senjum and Senator Carla Nelson. So welcome to the hearing today. We are going to go on to hear from Gary Smith of the Rochester Area Community Economic Development. If you could come forward, Mr. Smith. And he's not here? Okay. All right. Then we've got Lisa Clark with the Mayo Clinic. Welcome. If you could please state your name for the record and speak directly into the microphone.
Madam Chair, and
wait, hang on. It's the other microphone, apparently.
How's this? You guys hear me? Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Lisa Clark, and I'm the Division Chair for Public Affairs and provide leadership to community relations for Mayo Clinic. First, I just wanted to say thank you for making the journey to Rochester to see our lovely city. I hope you have some time to drive around and see what we have to offer. If you don't, come back. We'll give you a formal tour. Secondly, I just want to tell you that I appreciate the opportunity to share with you Mayo Clinic's economic impact in the region and our exciting plans for the future. First, Mayo Clinic, as you know, or I hope you know, that we are all about the patient. The needs of the patient come first. We live it and we breathe it, and we're about patient care, and we're about research, and we're about education. And the great part about being in this community and being Mayo Clinic is that the community embraces that concept as well. So it's really a hand-in-glove relationship that we have with this community. I'm going to take you back one step, or a few years actually, to 2009. In 2009, Mayo Clinic commissioned the Battelle Memorial Institute to quantify the economic impact for Mayo Clinic. So we learned a few things. We know now that we are the largest private employer in the state. We also know that we have about 34,000 full-time employees in Minnesota. And those people come from, they live in Rochester, and they come from the surrounding area. We also know that about 36,000 additional indirect jobs are needed to support Mayo Clinic's patients. So these people, local and regional companies, increase their employees also to provide goods and services for our Mayo Clinic patients. So that means we directly or indirectly support jobs for over 70,000 people in the state of Minnesota. And we have a total impact of $9.6 billion on Minnesota's economy. And so our economic impact study was very helpful to share some of those highlights with for us. But what I thought I might do is take a moment to bring you a little bit closer to home and share with you perhaps a day in the life at Mayo Clinic. So every day at Mayo Clinic, we do 5,700 outpatient visits. And every day at Mayo Clinic, we do over 200 admissions to the hospital. And every day at Mayo Clinic, and this is just Rochester, we do over 200 surgeries. 50% of our patients come from a radius of 120 miles. So it's an incredible regional draw. But the other 50% come from every single state in the United States and almost every country in the world. So we're a hub. The interesting thing about being Mayo and being a part of Rochester is that we can't do it alone. I mean, we take great pride in the patient service that we provide and the fabulous miracles that we do every single day for our patients, but we can't do it alone. And that's where the partnership with our community comes in. It's interesting, in the business of public affairs, you hear beautiful stories about the care of our patients every single day. But the wonderful part about the stories, they always talk about the community. They always talk about the waiter who helped them with their dietary needs that they have for particular tests. I find it interesting that our waiters know a lot about that and are helpful for our patients. They talk about the care that they received on the street, meaning, are you lost? Can I help you? Can I help you again? Almost to a fault. They're saying that people are so kind and friendly. They talk about the stores. They talk about the services. They talk about the products. They talk about the experience in Rochester. And to me, that's pretty powerful. Again, it's a great partnership. We're doing a strategic partnership right now, again, with Mayo Clinic working together with the community so that we can bump that service up a little bit. We've got great service. We give wonderful patient care. And what we want to make sure is when our patients step off the curb of Mayo Clinic, which is about 70% of their time here, sometimes we think it's out there at Mayo Clinic 24/7 when they come here because it is a destination stop for them. But really, 70% of their time, they're in the community. So we have wonderful white space where our community can envelop and surround our patients as well. And so what we're doing is working with the community, many groups in the community, to say, let's make sure that this experience, not only inside the walls of Mayo Clinic, is exceptional, but outside when they step off the curb as well. We believe that that type of program or relationship will provide additional investment into new jobs, increased economic output. So I think there's great potential here. We've got other targeted partnerships. We partner with the University of Minnesota in terms of our biotechnology and medical genomics. We partner with the Hormel Foundation to advance cancer research. We partner with IBM, so we figure out ways to merge technology and medicine. And we partner with the University of Minnesota Rochester in terms of all the opportunities for education. So the partnerships in Rochester and the surrounding area are so incredible for us. So as you can see, we are a hub, like I said before. And it's really just a high level that I've shared with you, but I think you have a lot of the information in your packet that we gave to you. As you move forward with your deliberations, we urge you to keep the significant growth in this area, the jobs, the economy, the potential that we have in Rochester and Olmsted County. Please keep it in mind. We are the third largest city. We are a regional hub, and we're proud of this particular area and the economic impact that it has in the state of Minnesota. So with that, again, I want to thank you for making the journey to Rochester, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. My brother's family had to spend a month in Rochester, and they said exactly what you just said. So it was a great experience, despite the horrible reason that they were here. So, yeah. But members, any questions for Ms. Clark at all? Representative Clark.
Well, actually, it was just based on you said you were going to say something about your future plans.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I missed that, but I did see in a hearing yesterday that Mayo wants to have a building in the Mall of America expansion, is that
we
right?
We do, yeah. One of the opportunities that we have is to build a presence in Mall of America, and we're calling it a gateway. So it's an opportunity to bring in national, international, local, regional patients where they can touch Mayo without actually having to drive to Rochester unless they need to drive to Rochester. So there's so many ways that you can touch Mayo without actually having a physical presence here. It could be through educational opportunities, it could be through products, it could be through interactions on the web, social media. So we're hoping that we're doing a test right now in the Mall of America to see if patients are interested in experiencing Mayo, meaning perhaps non-traditional ways and some traditional ways in Mall of America. We'll learn from that like we do. We're pretty good at research. So we learn from what we're going to place there and decide if there's a larger opportunity there.
Representative Clark, any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Clark.
Thank you.
Okay, and we have the mayor, Ardell Brady, if you could come forward.
Ardell Brady, mayor of the city of Rochester, Minnesota. I'm glad I'm able to come up here while I'm still getting paid. First of all, Chair Anderson and honorable members of the committee, thank you so much. On behalf of the city of Rochester, we express our thanks to you for taking time to get out to Greater Rochester or Minnesota and to obtain input from committee members or people from this area. Your efforts are sincerely appreciated, and I hope we do as well here as you were handled and taken care of in Hermantown when you were up there as a week ago, too. Before I go through some comments, I want to just quickly make a comment. There's a somberness in Rochester and Olmsted County today and the last couple of days. We lost Mike Podolke, who was a chair of the county commission, and on Wednesday, 67 years old, 24 years he was on the county commissions, and suddenly passed away. So there's that somberness in this community. I also am going to miss, because he would have been testifying, and he would have done a very colorful presentation, I'm sure, in the tradition that Mike would do it. So, anyway, the City of Rochester's main concern with any redistricting plan is whether it provides the citizenry who have a similar common interest with the opportunity to elect individuals who have that same general community interest to the Minnesota Senate or to the Minnesota House of Representatives. That primary question being, how can the citizenry be most fairly and equitably represented? And with that in mind, I'll go over some statistics that Ms. Clark also had done. Point out that for Rochester and Olmsted County, the City of Rochester was listed in with having a population of 85,806 in the 2000 census. That was up over 15,000 people from the 1990 census population of 70,745. So for 2010, the city population has been estimated at 106,655. And so with our growth since 1990, approximately 35,910 citizens, Rochester, as we said, has become the third largest city in Minnesota. We've been one of the fastest growing communities in Minnesota, and over the last 20 years, we've averaged a growth of about 1,800 citizens per year to our population, 1,800. The Olmsted County 2000 population, which includes the city, was 124,277 and is presently estimated at 148,130. So the 2010 population of Olmsted County approximates the population that is needed for two Senate districts and four House districts. Population of Rochester, Olmsted County, and immediately surrounding area in adjacent counties has an urban focus that revolves around the economy in the state of, in the City of Rochester. As was said, the Mayo Clinic in Rochester is the largest employer in Olmsted County and in all surrounding adjacent counties. Our employment in Rochester has increased from 65,685 jobs in 1990 to 84,730 in 2000 and to over 100,000 jobs in 2010. We have almost as many jobs as we have population in the city. Rochester is the employment center for a very large surrounding area with an estimated 40,000 workers commuting to the city for their employment. The population in Rochester and Olmsted County has demographic statistics differ from the surrounding region. In addition to our higher overall population, our minority population has increased significantly and now comprises approximately 17% of the population in Rochester. That percentage is more than twice as high as the percentage in the remainder of the region. So the primary and overriding community of interest in the immediate area surrounding Rochester is a diverse urban interest that is dependent on the Rochester economy. Common sense, equity, and fairness would suggest that the affected Rochester and Olmsted County population should be concentrated in two Senate districts and four House districts centered in Rochester so that these citizens of like economic and urban interest are able to have their interests represented most fairly. The total population of Olmsted County, which roughly equals the population needed for two Senate districts, would be concentrated in those districts as their census numbers warrant. We would strongly recommend that any redistricting plans for Rochester and Olmsted County start in the city and work outward to the most immediate surrounding area that is unquestionably an area of influence of the Rochester economy. The population and characteristics of Rochester and Olmsted County would support the fairness of having two Senate districts for Rochester, and we truly believe that this would be the most fair and equitable representation for our citizens. That was the approach taken in 2000, census redistricting, and we believe it has worked well for our citizens. So best wishes to you in your deliberations, and thank you for seeking our input, and I'll have a copy of this for you as we conclude here today.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate that. Members, any questions for the mayor at all? And condolences to you, Representative. Just condolences to you for the loss that you're suffering. I know that it's hard to see that happen, and we'll keep you in our thoughts and prayers.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Representative Murphy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, Mayor.
Brady.
I respect completely what you've said about Rochester and Olmsted County, but at the legislature, we are often talked about the cooperation with the other counties in the area, with Olmsted, Fillmore, Moore, Mauer, Houston, and so on. So if we start with the city and work outward, then is the population in the surrounding counties going to be able to be represented as fairly and equally as the Rochester Olmsted County people are, with the principles that Mr. Gillespie and Gehring talked about?
Mayor Brady.
That's why I said I wish you well in your job.
I thought that's what I was hearing.
I would never slight Mauer County, my home county and home city of Austin, but I think that could be done. I don't think that it would have to, jeopardize that. But obviously, it'll take some work to do that. But this is, and again, when this area, the jobs, it's the one that's the highest for all counties that do touch us, too.
Okay, and
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Mayor, you also talked about the growing minority population, and if we start with the city and work out, would a minority person be able to be elected, do you think?
Yes.
Just supposition. I have no idea where the minorities are or what the minority is.
And we have minorities on both our city council and as well as the school board has had members of the Somali community that have been elected. So I do not see that as any problem at all. In fact, we keep saying in the four major roads coming into Rochester, we're building an inclusive community, and we value the input of all of our citizens, and certainly the schools. I think we had somebody here from the school board, but we've got some 60 different languages that are spoken in the homes of the students that are coming to there. So we do value that, and certainly, as I say, they have been and are being elected to the various commissions and boards.
And I saw that at that foundation dinner that where we shared a table with the vast community.
Right.
And I saw that in the community, and I thought, this place has got it, and it's moving ahead. And you were so proud.
Yes, we are.
You, Mayor Ray. Perhaps other speakers are going to talk, and so I won't ask any more questions now, but if there's other people representing the counties around Olmsted that might shed more light on this, I would like to hear about it. Otherwise, maybe I'll have another question at the end.
I'll be here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much again for being here and your time. Thanks.
Thank you, Mayor. And Representative Murphy, actually, you're going to have Ken Brown, who's a county commissioner, come and speak to us next. But I understand that Representative Clark has a question.
Just to kind of follow up, Mr. Mayor, if you don't mind, a quick question. Follow up on Representative Murphy's question. 17% minority population, that's better than the rest of Minnesota as a whole, I guess.
14.
Yeah. So what I was going to ask you is, one of the things we do keep in mind when we're drawing the districts are what's called communities of interest. And I'm wondering if you can shed some light either here or maybe later in writing or whatever on whether or not there are specific demographic or geographic lines, I guess, that we should pay attention to in terms of that population.
Mayor Brady.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any specifically, but it's interesting at times when we've applied for some grants, we get faulted because we don't have certain ghettos. That, and I'm not equating that at all to the minority population, but we have people that are classified would be as minorities that are scattered throughout Rochester. So, but there are some groups of people that live in different areas. But again, I'm sure that could be accommodated if it's something that is significant that we want to make sure that that area is included.
Right. Representative Clark.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Mm-hmm. And County Commissioner Ken Brown, if you could come forward, please.
Thanks. I'm Ken Brown, County Board, been on for 8 years, representing District 2 in Homestead County, and welcome to Rochester, fastest growing community in the state. And I wasn't expecting to speak here, but our departed colleague was the chair this year, and so I'm his stand-in, good friend of mine. I've gotten very close to him over the course of my tenure and will miss him greatly. As you can see then, because of that, I took Casual Friday really seriously. There, dress up for y'all. And it's interesting, one side comment, with Minnesota's growth, it appears people still do like winter, although this one may change a few minds. So a few brief comments, and it's... In my mind, it's understood that you need representation that is understands your community. It's vital to the success and collaboration within that community. So how the legislative district is configured makes a big difference in how their priorities are represented and how effective that representation is up at the state level. Back in 2002, with the last census, the city and county were roughly divided at that point in time into two Senate, four House districts. Prior to that, there was one Senate district, two House districts, and they were all within the city limits, the balance of which was then outside, including other counties. The population in Rochester and Homestead is roughly equivalent to those same two Senate and House districts, and I think that has served us well and would continue to serve us well in the future. And so it seems logical and prudent to echo Mayor's comments that continue to use Rochester as that focal point for those boundaries for those two districts. We think it has served the community well and will continue to. And our deliberations and our future, and I hope we still get paid and make our deadline also. I think although I miss whether counties don't get see. So I don't care as much. Any questions?
Commissioner Brown, I do have a question for you. Can you give us a little bit of a flavor of the economy here? You have, obviously, Mayo being the largest employer in the area. Mm-hmm. What else do you have? You've got IBM. Can you give us a little bit information on that, please?
As IBM has actually, over time, gone down a bit from its high in probably the late 80s, mid-80s. That has spun off a great deal of additional technology investment. With the inclusion of University of Minnesota in the area, biosciences and ancillary businesses with that, not affiliated, certainly collaborating with Mayo, but not affiliated with Mayo, has created a great deal of diversity in our economy. Yes, Mayo is still the dominant force in the local economy in the entire Southeast region, but we have a great deal more diversity of companies and companies like my own that spin off and serve the growth of the community. It's what I do in the second part of my life.
Okay. All right. Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, Commissioner Brown, what is the population of Homestead County outside of the city limits of Rochester?
About two-thirds in the city, maybe a little bit more than that now, but I think around 67-68%. The rest of it's in the county. So all the small cities that we have and the rural folks.
Representative Murphy?
That's it.
Commissioner Brown, and members, any other questions at all?
Thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate it for coming. Folks, that ends the people that we had lined up to come and speak to us on a formal basis. If you have input that you would like to give to us, please step forward to the microphone. I just ask that you state your name for the record and would love to hear your thoughts on this process. So, and we've got a school board member, and it's Bly, correct?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Please state your name, please.
Brianna Bly, and I'm on the Rochester School Board. Your redistricting will not affect the school board because we are all at large. However, your redistricting greatly affects us when it comes to representation for the Rochester School District. It's interesting to me every time I hear the statistics that the city has grown with the minority percentage being up to 17% when the school district reflects a much different picture. We have continued to have a modest increase in our student population this year. We're about 16,427 students. That is up from 1999 when we were at 16,182. What has increased greatly is back in 1990, we had approximately 6% student of color. 2000, we had 17.5% student of color. And now we are closing in on 30% of students of color in the Rochester Public Schools. We now have 68 languages, excluding tribal languages, spoken in the Rochester Public Schools and in the homes of our students. That has also increased by a quite significant amount, because back in 2000 it was 46 languages. So as you can tell, we have something going on here in Rochester, and going on specifically in our schools, where our enrollment is seeing modest gains, our student of color population is seeing dramatic increases. With that comes a lot of needs that our students have as far as helping them reach a world-class education, of which we feel we are able to offer here in Rochester. We have had and enjoyed a good relationship with all of our legislators that have represented us and represented our students to you. I remember back probably about 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, our superintendent at the time, Jerry Williams, and I went up to meet with you, and we presented the tale of two cities, because I believe when we hear that Mayo is the driving economic factor and is huge, and also IBM, we haven't realized that Rochester itself in population has changed dramatically from what people around the state perceive us as. And so I just wanted to remind you, again, we have been able to work well with our legislators to help represent our students, all of our students. And as to the comment that you asked, if you'll repeat that, when you were talking about whether a minority would be able to be elected.
On the
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Ms. Bly, on the with the proposal of two senators and four representatives, mm-hmm. For Rochester and Olmsted County, would these be nice little squares, or?
Well, I think that what you heard
and
the mayor
17 he used the figure 17% minority.
Yes.
And so would, I was just trying to see if they're scattered all sure. over, or if there was enough of a representation that it would be obvious that there could be someone elected.
Ms. Bly. Yeah.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Murphy. Yes, I believe that that would be able to happen, and the mayor is correct when he talks about the dispersion of, am I saying that correctly, of our community. We have one school in our district that is at about 68% minority students and close to that in free and reduced lunch. Other than that, we have a pretty good at the different schools, and that's from elementary up to high schools.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Ms. Blythe, so it's possible we might have three possibilities, or three people being elected.
They absolutely
could be represented.
Ms. Blythe.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your questions, Representative Murphy. I do believe that that is something that you will see in the future. We have seen a great increase in our parents of our students of color in their participation in the school district. We have a program right now going through and specifically targeted towards parents of all students, but it is particularly becoming successful, and that is efficacy. and changing mindset about if students can learn and can all students learn and how do they do this. And because of the outreach and to our minority population, we have seen great percentage of parents participating. And as they do this, they have become much more active in participating in their students' education and attending conferences and such as that. And we have had quite a good representation over the last 3.5 years of a variety of unusual compared to what we had in the past, when we have committees, when we have input sessions, and we are seeing a large amount of our minority population turn out to take an active part in that discussion, and that has been helpful. So I do believe and would actually predict that you would probably see that within the next several years you will see candidates stepping forward to run for various offices. We have had two people of color serve on the school board as elected officials. We have had one that has been appointed.
Representative Murphy.
One more. I have another question for you then, so I can understand the school district more. Is the school district just within the city limits, or does the school district go beyond Olmsted? Does it go into Olmsted County or beyond Olmsted County?
Thank you. The school district boundaries are the most bizarre boundaries I've seen, where you have things chunked out and going around.
The scorpion?
Not for elections, but maybe you could come help us work that out. And so it does reach up. We have students that are not actually in Rochester proper. But they are able to choose to go to, for example, maybe Pine Island or to Rochester. And we draw a lot of students from that area in some of the close areas. But it's not totally, but it is a majority Rochester.
Representative Murphy.
So then there are other school districts in Olmsted County and the surrounding counties.
I heard Representative Norton say aloud yes.
I just have a couple of questions for you, Ms. Bly. Yes. So what is your open enrollment? What are your numbers that you bring in from surrounding areas? Do you have those on?
I wish I had known that. I will tell you that we are losing students to open enrollment.
Okay.
That is one of the questions that we've been asking since Representative Norton was on the board with me, because when someone fills out an application for open enrollment, they can put whatever reason that they fill, and most often it's smaller classroom sizes is the biggest reasoning. When you make a phone call to them, we are, and I'm from the South, so we see some of them will talk about the how hard it is for them to adjust to students, larger populations of students of color. So particularly in our school that has a higher percentage, we have seen some of what I would have in the South, what we would have classified as white flight. I do think that is stopping, though. I think that we're seeing that trend end as this community has really embraced and reached out to one another through various forms for there to be collaboration, and not only that, but an understanding of cultures and awareness of how it enriches our community. And as we have seen those efforts being made on school levels, on city levels, I think we are starting to pay off and see the results of that.
Thank you. Representative Loon, you had a question?
I did. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Bly. I'm sorry, could you go back and refresh me? I was interested in your numbers on diversity within your school district and in your school population, so maybe 10 years ago and where you are today.
I would be happy to do that, Representative Loon. Thank you, Chair. In 1990, we had about approximately 6% minority population. In 2000, it was approximately 17.5%. And currently, we are at 29.5%.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Ms. Bly. And then also, just on the composition of your district, do you have a sense of kind of the geographic size of your school district boundaries, like maybe square miles or
Ms. Bly?
I'm even looking to Representative Norton, who's squinting. I can tell you. it goes up past, you know, we take in part of Orinoco, and we go all the way over towards you would not understand what I'm talking about, but the
drove through.
I can't tell you, but it's a roughly, I believe our boundaries with busing students, we are looking at. I don't know. I can find that for you.
How many buses?
And get that to you. We have a tiered route, so we go out to our farthest and we bring in, and then we go out again and do our elementary routes, so our middle school and high school routes, and then we bring them in and then go back out for elementary students. I could not tell you that either. I apologize. But I can get those numbers for you.
Thank you. And Thank you, Ms. Bly, additional question. In my own school district, we've had sort of similar changes in, mm-hmm. in the levels of diversity, our student population. And I wondered about when's the last time your school district went through boundary changes of adjusting where students go to school?
We went through boundary adjustments probably 5 years ago. And actually, we had one school that was cited as possibly being in danger of not meeting our percentage with our district ratio, and that was in the southwest corner of Rochester, and we redistricted so that we could bring that into compliance numbers.
Thank you. How did you accomplish that? Did you just shift boundaries around, redirect students to alternative school sites within the district, all of those things?
We did a little of both. We realigned some of the boundaries, and we removed attendance boundaries of certain areas and reassigned them over to that school specifically.
Representative.
Thank you.
And Ms. Bly, I just have one more question, too. You mentioned the one school that has a higher population of minority students. What school is that?
That would be Riverside Elementary School, and that is the school that was built to accommodate two schools that were declining and not meeting state requirements of, and that was Hawthorne and Holmes, and the school was built for that population. It is actually, the attendance boundary is actually about where we sit, and so it is more of our downtown elementary school.
Thank you, Ms. Bly. Any further comments? Representative Murphy?
I'm sorry. One more or two. What is how many school board members do you have, and what is the population that you try to represent?
Ms. Bly?
We have 7 school board members, and we are at large, so we represent the entire school district, the city of Rochester. And if you are on that tax base, you get to vote for us, so it's quite large. I did have one final comment to make, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, and that is that I wanted to give you the percentage of our low-income, our free, reduced-price lunch population has also increased, and we are currently sitting at 32% of our students are free and reduced lunch.
Thank you, Ms. Bly. Mm-hmm. Any further questions, members? Thank you. I appreciate you coming forward.
225
One less, Ms. but I'm still going to check.
225 square miles is what we're looking at for the school district. Thank you, Ms. Norton. Is there anybody else from the audience that has any questions or comments? Please state your name for the record and welcome.
Hello, my name is Chelsea Glovitz, and I recently moved here to Rochester Township, so you can count me as part of this growing population. I'm originally from Eagle Lake, which is just outside of Mankato, and I've spent all my life here in southern Minnesota, except for when I was off going to college. Prior to living in Rochester, I lived in Rushford, Minnesota, which is southeast of here. So welcome to southern Minnesota, and I'm glad you came. Today, as a young woman, I come to ask you to consider the impact that redistricting will have on female legislators. Currently, just over 30% of our state legislature is made up of female representatives, which is obviously less than our general population. Here in Rochester, we have great female voices at the Capitol with Representative Tina Liebling, Kim Norton, and Senator Carla Nelson, all of who are here today. In the Mankato area, Representative Kathy Briner and Senators Kathy Sharon and Julie Rosen also bring the voice of women to the Capitol. And finally, Representative Patty Fritz out of the Faribault area and Jean Poppy out of Austin are among the female legislators in southern Minnesota. All across the state, though, it is important that women are welcomed and involved in our state legislature because they have a legislature because they have an impact on the types and amount of legislation that is created that affects women specifically. They bring another point of view to the way the state prioritizes its expenditures and helps to make sure that bills are being passed that deal specifically with problems faced by women. Many politicians in higher office often start their path in their state legislatures, and we need to continue to provide this opportunity for women leaders around the state. Women also have a unique viewpoint on healthcare and its impact on women, ranging from availability to access to coverage. They also provide increased attention to populations of older women, low-income women, and victims of domestic violence. Specifically, I want you to consider these three things throughout your deliberations. First of all, whether the number and kind of incumbent pairings adversely and disproportionately affect women. So when you redistrict, if women have to run against each other. The percentage of new territory assigned to women incumbents as compared to the percentage assigned to men. And then finally, the extent to which a female incumbent is assigned to a new district in which the majority of voters belong to an opposing political party. Thank you for your time and for coming here to Southern Minnesota, and I really hope that you will again return to the Southern Minnesota area after a plan has been proposed so that we can once again learn about it and talk about what's going on here and how it affects us.
Thank you, Ms. Glovitz. I appreciate it. And Representative Murphy.
Thank you. Could you repeat number three?
Yes. The extent to which a female incumbent is assigned to a new district in which the majority of voters belong to an opposing political party, which may have an impact in the more rural areas where we have rural female legislatures.
Representative Clark?
Well, this is just more a comment. I want to thank you for coming forward. That 30% is it's a problem, and it's just helpful, again, to have a young woman point that out. And I know one of the things that we know from research about women who run for office is often women don't grow up thinking, oh, I want to run for public office. We have to be asked pretty often. I don't know how true that is among all the people here, women, but it's probably pretty true for most of us. And so I just want to ask you, and you don't need to answer this on the record, but at some point will you think about running for public office? Just put that in the back of your mind.
Thank you. Anything else?
Thank you, Ms. Glovitz. I appreciate you coming forward. Is there anyone else that wants to come forward, has some questions or thoughts? Please state your name for the record and welcome.
Hi, I'm Laura Askelin, and I'm a citizen here from Rochester. I actually just live a few blocks away. I just really want to echo the sentiments of our great mayor that I think that the city of Rochester and Olmsted County should remain in as much as possible in one or two Senate districts. It's important the person or persons representing Rochester and our close surrounding areas be able to appropriately represent the interests of Rochester and Olmsted County in a fair and effective way. All throughout this current recession, we keep hearing again and again how Rochester is in its own little economic bubble. And we think if you divide the city and include further surrounding rural areas whose economic interests aren't directly affected by Rochester, that our legislators would have a difficult time representing the different interests and the economic realities of each area during the legislative process. I think the current districts do a pretty good job of providing the representation for our citizens with similar community of interest. And I urge this committee to consider electoral fairness to the cities of this area as the primary concern in establishing new district boundaries. And I would also like to request that this committee return once there are proposed plans so the public can react to those plans.
Thank you, Ms. Askelin. Any questions, members? Great. Anyone else? Well, thank you so much. You have been so welcoming. Oh, do you have some? Okay. People, don't be bashful. If you want to line up, saves us some time here. So.
Hi, my name is Jacob Grippen, and I came up today from Houston County.
Jacob, can you say your last name again, please?
Grippen, G-R-I-P-P-E-N.
Okay.
I came up from Houston County, La Crescent, to be specific. And I just wanted to thank you for coming down this way to Rochester and southern Minnesota and also into Marshall. I've had some experience working out there, and I want to thank you for going to Marshall as well. I just wanted to urge you, when you're drawing the lines, considering how to redistrict, to take into consideration our regional organizations, such as the Minnesota Department of Transportation's regions. Also, you know, how counties interact with one another, how, like, organizations such as Head Start and the library system and the judicial districts, and I just wanted you to take that into consideration. I also just wanted to echo Ms. Askelin and Ms. Glaubitz's sentiments about when you do have some plans drawn up, please do come back. We'll welcome you again to Southern Minnesota to hear, to have you present your ideas about how, you know, we'll draw our districts, and we'd love to have you back to talk about it and get our input once again. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Members, any questions?
Madam Chair.
Just Representative Clark, this, Mr. Griffin, if you could come back, please. Yeah. Representative Clark, your question?
You know, to take seriously your recommendations, it would be really helpful to have a map, I guess, that shows some of those regional boundaries that you were talking about. You mentioned transportation, Head Start, libraries, judicial districts. Is that something you could help make sure the committee has access to?
I could definitely help get you the information.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great. Is there anyone else that is interested in providing comment today?
Madam Chair.
Going once, going twice. Representative Murphy.
Is there anyone from any other part of the Southeast here that would stand for a couple questions?
Why don't you come forward, sir?
Okay.
Please state your name for the record.
I'm Charlie Boer, and I live in Olmsted County in the town of Stewartville. And I, a little figuring here that there's 138,000 people in Olmsted County. Is that right?
Mr. Brown, is that what about?
It's 148,000. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that would come out almost exactly then as two Senate districts.
Well,
is that about right?
Estimates for a House district are about almost 80,000, and so you're looking at 160,000 is what you're looking at for. Yes, for.
So then there's 20,000. Olmsted County is 20,000 short of having, mm-hmm. having that. So, well, one of the things I would recommend here is to try to keep it straight lines. And right now, House District 30B mm-hmm. is goes up into Wabasha County. It takes in Elgin and Plainview. And I would think that if we would cut that off of 30B, and then whatever we need more to fill out the two Senate districts, that we would go over to the west and take in Dodge County. Dodge County is right now in Senate District 29, mm-hmm. and that was squared up. So we don't have gerrymandered lines and so on right here. We can have square county. It'd be all Olmsted County on three sides and extend into Dodge County on the west side to make two Senate districts. And I'll stop there.
Thank you, Mr. Boer. Any questions, members?
Mr. Boer, that probably
Representative Murphy? That'd
probably work out really good if you lived on the Wisconsin border.
What?
That would probably work out, but we have counties on the east and the counties on the west.
I think what
fine.
You said.
Fine, not to answer that question. 29.
Mr. Boer?
What Wabasha County would gain out of 30B would be the city of Plainview, the township of Plainview, the city of Elgin, and the township of Elgin. And I'm glad you asked that question, because that will put Representative Draskowski's 28 over, and he can add population in Winona County can come off of that and so on. So 31 could take part of what was now in 28. And that would pretty well square it up. I haven't seen the figure, but it's going to look pretty close that you can change. You can make that adjustment. Add to 31, take off of 28, and that will compensate for what 30B added to 28. We'll no big problem. You don't need to draw crooked lines. Keep lines straight. I've been working in politics for over 40 years, and I don't want zigzag lines. Keep things straight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd.
Any other questions?
Okay. Great. Thank you for coming forward. Anybody else? Don't be bashful. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you very much. I'm Marion Clennon, and I'm a member of the Austin City Council. Mm-hmm. And I just want to thank you all for coming down, and I've learned a lot from this. I'm pretty new at the redistricting, so I appreciate all the information that you brought to us.
Very good.
I welcome any questions.
Thank you so much for coming. I appreciate it. That's a little bit of a hike from Austin.
Not too bad. It was a nice day.
Representative Poppy got you to come here today, so we appreciate that as well. So
it was because of her memo she sent out
yesterday. Very good. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
I'm Kathy Megerline, and I am president of the League of Women Voters here in Rochester.
Kathy, could you say your last name again, please?
Megerline.
Megerline. Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
I basically want to thank you for coming today. I appreciate, I think, the transparency and letting us be invited and come to this and hear the discussion. And I don't know if it's possible, but like others have recommended, we really would appreciate if you come back when the lines are drawn so we can, discuss and maybe ask questions again. I don't know if that's possible.
I don't know either, but thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Any questions?
In other words,
Ms.?
You want more, Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
In other words, you want to see the draft before
yes.
we vote yes.
Exactly. See, a draft is fabulous because then you get a sense of where things are going and if there are things that maybe didn't appear when we talked today, they would show up.
Well, and thank you, Ms. Megerline, by pointing that out. It's something, too, that I think you should be aware of. When the plans do come out, watching news reports, looking at the Internet as well.
Right.
And again, please don't hesitate to contact me. All my information's up on the web. So I appreciate to hear any feedback that you might have. So,
thank you.
Okay. Great. Anyone else that would like to come forward? Representative Garofalo.
For the city council member from Austin, is she still here?
Ms. Clennon, could you come forward?
I figured you drove all the way here. You might as well have someone ask you.
Thank you.
Just, right now, Austin is the county seat of Mauer, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, in terms of traffic patterns and employment patterns, southern Mauer County right now is not part of Mauer County is divided into.
Right.
Southern Mauer County, do people tend to be employed in Austin as opposed to other communities? Is that sort of a, I don't want to use the term regional hub, but is that the case that the southern Mauer County is going to be identical to northern and eastern Mauer County in terms of traffic patterns, shopping, community of interest?
Yes, we thank you very much. Yes, a lot of people from the Lyle-Leroy area do work in Austin, and a lot of them commute up. I work for Hormel Foods, and most of my coworkers are from that area of the county.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And Madam Chair and to the council member. So is it fair to say that, when I look at the lines here and then drawn, that those areas do share that common community of interest, the city of Austin?
Ms. Clennon?
Yes, thank you. Yes, it does.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And, I should ask this of you as well. So I know Hormel is the big employer down there. Do you know how many they employ?
Oh, I don't have that number right off.
What other industries, though, within the city of Austin?
We have a few smaller companies. CRC is a company that, and I believe Representative Poppy might be better at that, but they are a company that it's a lot of telephone calling in and they work around the country on, like, for utility companies, instead of calling your utility company, this is kind of a company that is hired out to do that for them.
Troubleshooter then. Okay. Mm-hmm. Great.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Ms. Glenn.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else?
Madam Chair.
Representative Loon.
I had a question for the mayor, if he doesn't mind coming back.
Mayor Brady, would you mind stepping forward, please? Mayor Brady. I apologize for that. I know I do that. I say that wrong.
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Mayor Brady, Representative Loon.
I thank you, and I'm sorry to interrupt your conversation there. I had a question about your unemployment rate in Rochester and then the surrounding counties, if you have any perspective on that.
Gary, do you have it?
Excuse me.
Because we're on tape, we have to have that on there. If you could just step forward and state your name for the record.
If Mr. Smith would have been here, he would have.
And it's Gary Newman, right?
Gary Newman, yes.
Gary Newman. Somebody may have a more accurate number than mine. I think we're about a percent or a percent and a half below the state average. We're a little less than the state average for unemployment here.
Representative Loon?
Thank you.
We can get you the exact data.
Okay. And then I'm wondering, is that for the city of Rochester proper or the surrounding counties? Do you have any information?
I think it's usually for the county.
The county. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you, Mayor. Any other questions? Well, thank you once again for coming out today. Hopefully we've answered some of the initial questions that you might have. But again, feel free to call me or email me if you have any further questions. And have a great day. It's a bright, sunny day out there. We are adjourned.